That's good. And welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody, and, of course, joining me for another fun episode, my wife, Audrey.
Hello. Wow, what a intro.
I got to change up the intros. Like, it's going to get boring if it's just like, And welcome to the show. This is your host, Cody, and my wife, Audrey. And you just go, hello. No, it's got to be something fun every day. I might do like the, you know, and now sitting in the blue corner, 125 pounds, 5 foot six.
120 pounds, not quite.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. A little bit more than that.
Just trying to make this fun. We had a good day today. We've been having some drinks all day. It was pretty nice, except for the quick thunderstorm that rolled through.
During a party.
Yeah, during my brother-in-law's birthday party. Shout out to Steve. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Steve.
We're recording this on your birthday. But yeah, it was a nice day overall.
It was.
What are we drinking tonight? What did you drink earlier?
Earlier?
Yes.
Well, I started with Blue Moon. And then
That's right, because we were sitting on the...
Yeah.
We were sitting on the deck.
And then I had some wine, some Savvy B.
Savvy B.
And now I am back to having a Blue Moon. And I'm only drinking because we're podcasting, but I have a major headache, so...
Oh, she has a major headache, so this could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll see how... I probably should not have another beer, but...
I started with Coors Banquet.
That's fine.
After I installed our mailbox and took another great... stump out of the ground, and then I had Yellowstone whiskey for the first time.
Oh yeah, Steve was showing that off.
My aunt Ramona out in Denver sent him a bottle of Yellowstone whiskey for his birthday, and it came. Well, she didn't send it. She got him the subscription through Flaviar. Yeah, unofficial ad promotion there. Flaviar, basically, it's an alcohol subscription, and every 3 months you can get a new bottle of either whiskey, vodka, whatever you like to drink. They have a bunch of different stuff that you can choose from. They send you tasters in vials, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we had it.
Yeah, we had it for a year. My aunt got me the same gift, actually, once upon a time. But this was the bottle that came from that subscription. It was the Yellowstone bottle, and it was really good. I took it, I drank it neat, and then I put ice in it because I like whiskey on the rocks.
History on the rocks, right?
I do. I like bourbon and whiskey cold.
So do I.
Yeah, but the Yellowstone is phenomenal. So if
you and you're like supposed to try it not on ice,
right? You're supposed to get
when
the
you're tasting it,
right? Yeah. You're supposed to get the flavor profile of it while it's neat, and then when you want to drink more of it, you drink it on the rocks because it's easier to drink.
Well, and I don't know. I prefer it cold.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's just easier to drink cold. Like, I drank a few beers before we had that glass, and I'm like, you know what? Like, I need to put ice in this because, like, I've already had a couple, and I can't do just straight whiskey right now, you know, warm. So, put some ice on it.
Yep.
But Yellowstone, it was phenomenal. I've seen ads about it. I've seen commercials for it. Haven't had it until today, and it was really good. But again, we're back to drinking Blue Moon, and I'm drinking Banquet.
We are going back to what we started with.
Coors Banquet. The Banquet Bear. I'm not Sam Elliott, but he does a great job in those commercials with his voice.
Yeah. Like, I don't feel like I've really drank a lot, like two beers and two glasses of wine since, what, noon?
Yeah.
And, I get headache.
She's got a headache because she's rubbing her eyes right now as we're talking.
I do. I have a headache, and it's not fun, but I just can't drink like I used to. I could drink anybody under the table. Back in the day, I could drink all night long.
That's a tall order right there.
I drank a lot of people under the table.
You couldn't drink me under the table.
Many nights I did.
Yeah,
I went to bed, and I kept drinking.
Okay.
All night long.
Oh. All night. Oh, what's that song? All night long. I don't even know.
But, well, you know,
well,
get pregnant, have a baby.
Since we're talking about drinking people under the table, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
We're going to get into this episode.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What is the longest that you've ever danced?
The longest I've ever danced?
Yeah. So, like, if you could think back to a time, whether it's college or our adult life here, what is the longest night you remember dancing?
Well, remember? I don't know. But, I mean, I was on the dance floor, in which I said at our wedding, I want to be on the dance floor all night.
You were.
And I never took my heels off, which was a really stupid mistake. But I would probably say our wedding, to be honest. I probably have danced longer nights, but I don't know. Probably our wedding.
Let me ask you another question. Have you ever danced to exhaustion before?
No.
To where you were so tired that you danced and danced and danced till you fell down?
No.
Well, you're not partying like the people in Strasbourg, France, back in the year of 1518. Because our episode today is called The Dancing Plague.
I'm excited about this one. I'm so curious.
This is a very interesting story. And it's like, you know, we're those type of people that like the mystical stuff and supernatural stuff. And this has some of that element to it. But when you look at it in like modern terms, and like modern day medicine and understanding of how like psychologically the brain works, this story would be boring. But if you think about the supernatural element to the story, it makes it kind of fun. So we are visiting Strasbourg, France, back in the year 1518, when a bizarre occurrence spread through the community. And this was on a hot July day. There were pipes, drums, and horns playing on a stage just outside of a local horse market.
What day in July?
It doesn't say the specific date. It just said it was a day in July.
Bummer. Let's just say it was the 15th. Sounds like a good
That's
day.
That's Audrey's birthday. That's why she wants it to be the 15th.
Sounds like a good day, I think. So.
Yep.
Let's go with it.
But we're recording this on the day of the Kentucky Derby, and we won some money today on the winner.
Woohoo! Very, very close race.
That race was won by a nostril. I have never seen
literally.
I've never seen a closer horse race in my life. Yet the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah. And the one that I wanted,
Mystic Dan, for the win.
Mine got third. I don't know where Resilience ended up.
I put a $10 bet on Mystic Dan thanks to our friend Ryan, and it was a $196 payout.
Whoop
whoop. So
we'll take it.
We'll take it. But yeah, hope everyone enjoyed the Kentucky Derby. It's like they say, it's the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. And today it really was.
It's so exciting. I love the Derby.
So yeah, this plague, this dancing plague, starts outside of this horse market in Strasbourg, France. And people dance, spinning in circles, hopping around and chanting. From the looks of it, it's a fun time just being had by the locals, enjoying the music, kind of like a carnival display. You know, people are out having a good time, throwing a party, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, something odd is kind of happening here. Because people are starting to notice that, like, the people that are dancing, their eyes are glazed over, and it looks like they're not really present in their own bodies, like almost a possession.
Mm.
Like, these people are just dancing without any type of cognizance.
Yeah, like they're not, they're just dancing and not really there.
Like, oddly. And people start to notice that there were, like, the wooden clogs that they're wearing back in the 1500s, they're starting to fill with blood. And then people start to make, like, these spastic movements that look like, you know, possessions. Like, demonic possessions, almost. Like, they're just making spastic. It's not even, like, it's not even, like, rhythmic dancing anymore. It's just
moving.
Spasms. Right.
Huh.
Now, this weird phenomenon isn't just occurring in Strasbourg. It's also occurring up and down the Moselle and the Rhine rivers. And these dance plagues overcame many communities. Some impacted only a few people, some impacting hundreds in different villages and towns. And these outbreaks, they actually have a name. It's called choreomania, like choreography, and then manic. So choreomania.
Huh.
It's weird.
That is weird.
And now, accounts of this choreomania outbreak are depicted in many works that have been preserved from the time this happened. One 17th century chronicle by the Strasbourg jurist Johann Schilter quotes a now lost manuscript poem, and it states, quote, many hundreds in Strasbourg began to dance and hop, women and men, in the public market, in alleys and streets, day and night, and many of them ate nothing, until at last the sickness left them. This affliction was called St. Vitus dance. And we'll get into St. Vitus in a minute. But a physician and alchemist named Paracelsus visited Strasbourg 8 years after the dancing plague and was fascinated with finding the causes for such an odd event. In his work, Opus Paramirum, he states that it all started with a woman named Frau Trophia. Now, if you're looking at the artwork of this podcast episode, this is a AI-generated image of Frau Trophia dancing in the streets of France, Strasbourg specifically. Now, Frau Trophia, unaccompanied by music, started to dance outside her home one morning. Her husband, after some time, kept begging her to stop, but she just couldn't. After dropping from exhaustion, she retired for the night. However, in the morning, she was right back at it outside her house again, on the cobblestone street, dancing with swollen feet. Now, after 4 to 6 days, depending on the account of the story being told, local authorities stepped in and sent her away in a wagon to the city of Saverne, where it is said she was to be cured at the shrine of Vitus, which is the saint in which they believed was cursing her. Now, although she was taken away to be quote-unquote cured, many who sat drinking and watching her over the days began to dance as well. So kind of like a contagious thing. More than 30 people fell into choreomania, and some could not be stopped until they were beyond exhausted or even died of heart attacks.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So let me tell you who St. Vitus is, because I don't think a lot of people have heard of St. Vitus.
Nope. Not me.
Maybe if you're like super religious, you would have heard of St. Vitus before. But St. Vitus was an adolescent martyr of the church, the Roman Catholic Church. And he was born in Sicily in the year 290 and died as a martyr during the persecution of the Christians by the Roman Emperor in 303 at the age of 13. St. Vitus is counted as one of the, quote, 14 holy helpers, end quote, of the Roman Catholic Church. Vitus was only 7 years old and the son of a senator of Lucania. He resisted his father's attempts, which included various forms of torture, to make him turn away from his Catholic faith. He fled with his tutor and tutor's wife, who was also his nanny, to his father. He was then taken from there back to Rome to drive out a demon, which had taken possession of a son of the emperor Diocletian. After he worked his miracle and cured the son from epilepsy, he remained steadfast to the Catholic faith. This is not what the emperor wanted and asked him to give up his faith and worship the emperor's gods and idols. So, if people don't know this, the Roman Catholic Church, okay, was not the main religion of the Romans. The Romans had a polytheistic religion at the beginning where they worshipped multiple gods, like Roman mythology and Greek mythology, they are very close together.
Mm-hmm.
So the Romans at first, before Catholicism became the main religion in the Roman Catholic Church, they worshipped many gods. So the emperor wanted him to stop being a Christian and to, again, worship the Roman gods. Vitus was tortured along with his tutor and nanny by the emperor. By a miracle, they were brought back from Rome to Lucania, where they all three died from their tortures they had endured by the Roman emperor. So the Roman emperor had them tortured for being Christians, and they would later die of those injuries. Now, it is reported that 3 days after Vitus's death, he appeared to a distinguished matron named Florentia. Together, he and Florentia, who found the bodies of him, his tutor, and nanny, buried them in the spot that they were found. He worked many miracles, even in his youth. Now, today, he is very popular in Italy, Germany, and Bohemia. Many countries celebrate this youth's feast day by dancing around his statue, and have for many centuries now.
Dancing around the statue.
The St. Vitus dance is very popular to this day in those countries. So now back to Strasbourg. The local council was desperate to stop the ongoing plague and turned to the clergy for guidance. Because back then, everyone went to the church for their problems.
Yeah.
The church was like the highest
Yeah, and there was no, like, oh, let's talk about your mental health.
Right.
With mental health professionals.
Right. So the church, like, exactly, you know.
That was people's mental health.
Exorcisms. Once someone was going crazy, they immediately went to a priest for an exorcism.
Yeah.
The clergy believed that the vengeful saint was responsible for the plague. The council also conferred with a group of physicians who came to the conclusion that the dancing was occurring to a quote-unquote natural disease which comes from overheated blood. Now, one of the cures was to have the affected bleed to get it out of your system. However, the physicians recommended that in past observances of this quote-unquote disease, the best thing to do was let them dance it out of them.
Because, like, you're dancing so much, your feet hurt and you're going to be
bleeding.
Like,
yeah, it's either that or
it's like, where else would you be bleeding when you're dancing?
It's either that or they literally believe in the 1500s that you're possessed by dancing, and the best way to do it is to just dance the possession out of you.
Or that, yeah, that makes sense.
So we call this historical context.
Yeah.
Because we have to look at this story from the 1500s, not 2024.
Oh, totally.
We are much more educated and have more reasoning behind things, right? We have to look at it from what would have been believed back then.
Yeah, for sure.
A 16th century chronicle written by an architect named Daniel Specklin states that the council had carpenters and tanners transform their guild halls into temporary dance floors and, quote, set up platforms in the horse market and in the grain market, end quote, in full view of the public, to keep the accursed in motion and so expedite their recovery. Dozens of musicians were paid to play drums, fiddles, pipes, and horns, with healthy dancers brought in for further encouragement. So basically, they're bringing in hired dancers to keep the affected dancers of this disease that they have to keep going until they get it out of them. The authorities hoped to create the optimal conditions for the dance to exhaust itself. Musicians played continuously, and they even had people not infected dance along to encourage the dancing to continue. We were just talking about that. And then the plan backfired. Because, in fact, more people became infected by observing and dancing.
That's so weird.
So it is said that the supernatural was more at play than the logical. What started as 30 people being possessed by dancing turned into over 400. So naturally, the council had all the dancing stages torn down, and the choreomaniacs must dance out of the view of the public in order to not infect anyone else. So basically, go home and dance in your house so that no one sees you dancing anymore and no one else can be infected by this crazy...
You have to dance in private.
Exactly. Go dance in private because you're being crazy.
I wonder what the music would be like. Or, like, was there music? Or they just are literally dancing
I just told you, there's drums, pipes, and flutes.
Oh. Huh, I wonder what it sounded like.
I don't know. Think about, like, old European music, like pipes, flutes, and fiddles, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like the Pied Piper.
So, but then, like, the people that are doing the instruments, are they all of a sudden getting this urge to dance?
I don't think so, because they're musically inclined, not dancing inclined.
But, like, if it's so contagious,
right?
Why wouldn't they be?
Maybe they were playing their instruments with their eyes closed.
But it would really be just because you're seeing it, you're going to start doing that?
Well, let's put it
this
way.
If you're possessed, then you can have your eyes closed and it's still going to happen to you.
But think about this. When you go to a wedding, if you're not the first one on the dance floor, you're more inclined to dance when you see other people start dancing.
Yeah, I guess.
Feel more comfortable.
Yeah. I'm sure they weren't playing with their eyes closed, though.
So more people ended up being taken to Severn in wagons where Frau Trophia had been cured at the Shrine of Vitus. Now, here's the crazy part. At the shrine, there were priests that put the choreomaniacs under a wooden statue of St. Vitus. They put crosses in their hands and red shoes on their feet, which were doused with holy water and marked with a cross from consecrated oil, so like a blessing. Then they used Latin incantations with incense, and those possessed by the saint began to come out of the trance-like dancing.
Interesting.
Yeah. More people were sent to the shrine from Strasbourg once word reached that the ritual was working. It was said they were being forgiven by St. Vitus by being taken to his shrine. The dancing plague lasted over a month, and at least 15 people died each day from heat exhaustion, heart attack, or stroke. There is not a record death rate, but if the data left behind from history is accurate, then it would have reached the hundreds. So, anywhere upwards to 900 people were affected by this.
Okay, question though.
Here we go.
1500s. How did they know people died from heart attacks and strokes? Like, did they do autopsies and they had, like, the means to determine the cause of death?
Well, not in the medical, like, sense that we know today of heart attacks and strokes, but you definitely know when someone's heart stops.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you can have a heart attack and live.
But it's not like we're talking about cancer.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're talking about, like, a heart attack is, like, a physical attack on the body in an instant. People can tell you while they're having a heart attack, like, their chest hurts and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's pressure. Your arm is going numb. I don't know. I just was like, whoa, like, hold on. They were, like, saying heart attacks and strokes. Like, how do you
right.
know that?
But step back. It's a good question. I am not a medical doctor, and I don't know the history of this medicine. But I'm going to guess that something like a stroke or a heart attack was something that was more common to understand back in the 1500s because they had more physical symptoms that are immediate rather than long-term symptoms like heart disease or cancer or that kind of stuff.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, what is the main cause for this odd circumstance? Was it actually heavenly revenge or a blood-boiling disease that led those to go dancing for days? The conclusion by many modern historians is that the plague was caused by ergot, E-R-G-O-T. What this is, it's a mold found in damp rye stalks that can have an effect on the human mind. People can have hallucinations, twitch, and jerk around. This is also known as what's called St. Anthony's fire. However, one expert on the dancing plague offers a more in-depth explanation in his book titled A Time to Dance, A Time to Die, which actually was published in 2009. The year we graduated high school.
Whoop, whoop,
whoop, whoop. In basic form, what he says is that it comes down to extreme stress and psychological breakdown. He claims that Strasbourg's poor were under extreme stress due to the bad harvests that year, political instability, and the arrival of syphilis. The dancing became a psychic contagion, which people then started to believe it must have been St. Vitus in his revenge, because obviously at this time, this is very high medical type of understanding that we would have to have today,
yeah.
Like in 2009 when this book is written, to go back and logically think about what's actually affecting these people.
For sure.
So back then, like we're saying, historical context, if we go put ourselves in the minds of the people in the 1500s, it's more likely that a saint has come back for his revenge in the paranormal,
yes.
Rather than the logical that we understand today in 2024 and even back in 2009 of there's a logical explanation to this in psychosis.
Yes.
So because when things don't make sense, we as humans naturally try to make sense of it, whether it is logical or not. Like we were just talking about in this case, it's easier, right, to say this is a vicious, vengeful saint that has come to take his revenge on the people of Strasbourg.
Yeah.
Rather than, hey, there might be a psychological explanation as to what's going on and why all these people just keep dancing till their feet bleed.
Yeah. And, or die.
Or, yeah, or exactly.
I mean,
dance to exhaustion or die of heart attack and stroke. Because, well, you know, exhaustion
can lead to, yeah.
Can lead to death. That's the story of the dancing plague.
That's kind of crazy.
It's just kind of interesting because,
it is.
Like, today we'd be like, oh, yeah, that's totally like a psychosis type of breakdown.
Yeah. But, like, for all of those people to have, like, a psychosis breakdown would be a little weird.
Well, if they're all of the same demographic of, like, poor Strasbourgans, I think that's what you would call them. I don't know.
Sure.
Sounds right to me.
It is now.
if they're all, like, poor and under the same amount of stress of all those things we were just talking about, it's pretty, I mean, it's pretty clear that logically, like, you would use, like, the dancing to kind of, like, relieve that stress.
Self-care.
Yeah, self-care. And just keep dancing because, like the phrase, dance like you don't have a care in the world, right?
Dance
like it's a stress
like
reliever.
No one's watching. Gabby Barrett's new song.
Next week's episode, we're just going to have Audrey sing
oh, no.
lines from songs. And
No.
I think the first song I'm going to make her sing is Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On. From the Titanic.
Oh, no.
Because apparently her father has not given me the tape yet, but there's a great video of her singing that when she was a child, and she was pissed off because no one was listening to her.
No. That's two different stories.
Oh.
That's two different stories.
Oh, that's right.
Stories.
I just put two stories into one.
Yeah, I got pissed off when my mom started
you got
laughing
off when
at me.
Your mom was
me
laughing at you.
When I was singing.
That's
it.
Right. That's right.
But she said it was like late at night and she was overtired and blah, 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 whatever. I remember her laughing at me.
My dreams. You don't want me to sing. I will not.
You don't want me to sing either.
Yeah. But yeah, next week we might have Audrey sing on the podcast. Who knows?
No, thank you.
But yeah, interesting story. You know, obviously, like today we were talking about, this has a lot more scientific and psychological understanding as to what was going on at the time, rather than, you know, a vicious saint coming back to take his revenge on the people of Strasbourg, France.
Yeah, but, I mean, who knows? Who knows?
Another nice, quick episode. Next week, we're going to get into some funny, history.
Funny?
Yeah. Next week's episode is called Ridiculous Battles, Part 1. And we're
going to
talk...
we're going to another part.
No, it's not like that. I'm calling it part one because there's four different ridiculous battles that I picked out, and I just wanted to do it in two and two. So I'm just going to call it part one, part two, and not put it into one episode. Next week, we're going to talk about how the Austrian Empire, their army, ended up killing each other, which involves alcohol.
I mean, doesn't surprise me either.
So that's a fun story. And then we're also going to talk about the Great Emu War in Australia. Yeah, if you haven't heard of the Great Emu War, pretty funny stuff. You never thought that humans would go to war with birds.
I mean, I know that people down there, like, fight kangaroos.
Yeah, we've seen videos of people punching kangaroos in the face to save their dogs.
Or, like, these big things just coming at them.
Yeah.
Those kangaroos are huge.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any emu videos, though.
Oh, the emu. Okay, so I'm going to post. So that's the funny part. Next week, the episode, I'm going to post on our, I'll probably even put it out on our social media, but I'm also going to put it on our website. I'm going to post the actual footage of the emu war.
There's footage.
Yes, there's footage because it was just after World War I when there was actually videos.
Oh.
And this is a black and white video. Fox Entertainment Company back then was just getting started, and there is an actual video of these men shooting at the emus during this emu war in Australia. It's fantastic.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So, fun stuff.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Some more exciting stuff for the podcast. We are in talks right now with Whiskey Acres. For a potential cross sponsorship. We are getting t-shirts made by a friend of ours.
Yeah. I'm wearing her shirt right now.
You are wearing her shirt right now that she made you. So we'll be promoting her on the podcast, and we're going to do some giveaways. We're going to do some t-shirt and sticker giveaways to some of our followers. So look out for that. It'll be posted on Facebook, Instagram, how to get a History on the Rocks podcast t-shirt. That will be sent along with some of our, you know, stickers you can put on your water bottles or laptops or whatnot.
Promotion.
But we're just, you know, we're moving along here. So some exciting stuff coming up in the future. Audrey's got a headache, like a... She's just rubbing her temples.
It's feeling better. I took Tylenol when we got home.
All right. Well, we're gonna send Audrey to bed.
What time is it?
It's time for you to go to bed if you have a headache. All right. Anything else for our listeners, Audrey? You got any comments?
I do not.
Questions? Funny jokes?
No, I do not.
All right. Well, thank you all again for listening to another episode of the History on the Rocks podcast. We will see you next week with some ridiculous battles. And
I'm excited for those.
Yeah, they're actually really funny. But we hope you enjoy your weekend. Go grab some drinks, relax, see some friends and family.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
To all the mamas.
It's Audrey's first actual Mother's Day this year. Official. First official Mother's Day this year. So should be a good time.
Yeah.
Everyone enjoy your weekend. Tell your mothers you love them.
Yes. All the mamas.
And we'll see you next week.
Love you. Bye.
Cheers.